This is a production of Cornell University.
All right, everybody, we're going to go ahead and get started. As you all know, President Pollack is joining us. She's not here yet, but we'll go ahead and do roll call. So,
all right. I'm Howell.
I'm here.
Christine Mahoney. Not here. Brandon Fortenberry. Here. Kate Supron. Here. I just saw her. She has a web here. Kara Chan. Not here. Karen Parko is here. Anthony McCabe is here. Dave, you got me. I'm here. David Heiner, I think he's at a Herald staff meeting. He's not here. Ellen Miller.
Last week. So yes, very important.
Thank you.
I think we can also consider this open discussion time. If anybody has anything they'd like to bring before the body, questions, events, anything like that, please feel free.
Hello, everybody. So last year during the EA staff conversations, I went to most of them and took notes, and a theme that came up was the idea employees like to have lunch together, but they don't really have a lot of spots to do that. A lot of places on campus offer kitchenettes, maybe, but it's not really the best place to try to invite somebody from across campus to come and meet you for lunch. So there were two events that were outlined. One was called the Super Hope, which is like a storytelling forum on campus. It's very popular. There was also a soup at the Statler Regent Lounge, which is something that the faculty members had access to. And then without a public announcement, employees did have access to. And in my notes, in all capital letters, is like people are going bonkers for these lunch opportunities. So it occurred to me that the employee assembly potentially has an opportunity to meet with their constituents in a forum, maybe like a monthly lunch somewhere on campus. It has to be an underutilized dining hall out there that once a month, a handful of EA members can come and sit to talk about what they're doing or just, you know, what is life like at Cornell. Because it is not likely that they would build us an employee cafeteria on campus, but it is likely that we do have some options at the dining hall. So I mentioned this to Mortonberry, who is related to Cornell Dining, and he said that this looks like something that would be possible, and there are a variety of sites. And he also proposed that there would potentially be an option for an employee-based monthly happy hour at the Moakley Club, which is near the golf course. He also came up with the snazzy title, the Cornell Employee Club. So I ran this by the executive committee, and they said, well, this isn't – actually, I brought it to the Employee Welfare Committee first, and they said, this is probably not something that we need to write a resolution and build a whole formal event. I also mentioned it to the English committee, and they followed in line with the Employee Welfare Committee. So the question I have for everybody is, would that be something that some of our members would be interested in pursuing? It does fill some of our goals of connecting with our constituencies and gives us a standing ground outside of this meeting to meet together and have a good time. So I'm interested in anybody's responses, thoughts, or feedback to that idea.
And let's table that question until until a little bit later. But no, that's totally fine. So, welcome, President Paul. Thank you so much for being here with us. I think, would you like to?
Yes. Can I give a few updates?
Please.
And I want to start, I always do this, but I want to thank everybody. As I always say, shared governance is really important on this campus. Employee assembly really matters. I know you all have jobs take a lot of time and commitment, so I really appreciate your putting in the time for this. I wanted to give just a few updates, and I will leave time for questions and discussion. But I have a new policy, which is anytime I'm meeting with a group, I want to start with a two or three really cool academic things that are happening on campus, because that's why I do my, and that's what we're all supporting. The one is some incredibly exciting news out of the physics department, where Professor Jörg Hofstetter and his team achieved a goal that was more than 50 years in the making, and it has to do with creating energy-conserving particle acceleration methods over in the synchrotron. I won't go into the technical details because I don't understand them, but I do know that they've been trying to do this for 50 years, and this is going to open some really path-breaking new forms of research. I see that's nodding. Also, I don't know how many of you are readers, but from another part of campus, Susan Choi, who got her Master of Arts here in 1995, just won the National Book Award for her book Trust Exercise. It's a great book. I recommend it. I started reading it, and I thought, I'm not sure I want to read a book about high school kids at a performing arts high school, but it's really good, and I definitely recommend it. And just one other highlight. Down in Weill Cornell, there's a lot of, honestly, very cool stuff going on. But one thing that some of their researchers recently did using AI, my field, was they looked at about 12,000 early-stage embryos, and they used a machine learning algorithm trainer on it. And this system, which, by the way, they called Stork, can now detect with great precision which embryos are likely, when implanted into a woman, to lead to a healthy pregnancy and which aren't. So I think that's pretty cool. with results like these, it's no wonder that in the recent Reuters ranking of innovative universities, we are now number 9, up from number 16. I'm not a big fan of rankings. A lot of rankings have ridiculous criteria. This is actually a good ranking. The criteria are relevant and objective. There are things like how many patents, how many papers co-authored with people in industry, how many other patents cite our work, and so on. So I'm very excited about that. I want to give you a quick update on Greek life, because that has been so much a topic on campus these days. And I want to start by reiterating my belief that the fraternities here are important. They provide a social outlet. They provide a place where students find friends. They have the potential to provide a place to learn leadership skills and engage in philanthropy. There's some debate about how well they're doing that, but in principle, they could do that. But as you know, there have just been, in the almost 3 years I've been here, a series of bad episodes. And it's not unique to Cornell. We see this all over the country. Hazing in particular, and you need to know that by hazing, I don't mean, oh, I drank a beer. I mean doing really, really dangerous things and forcing, they end up fraternities, not the sororities, mostly for young men, to engage in really dangerous and degrading and sexually aberrant behavior. So a year and a half ago, almost 2 years ago, in May of 18, I put out a set of policies. Unfortunately, the problems continue. We've had 6 fraternities in that period, 6 suspended, and we don't do that lightly. It has to be really serious and substantiated misconduct. And then, of course, you know, we had this student, Antonio Cialis, who died in November. Now, I want to reiterate clearly, we don't know how he died. We do know he was at an unauthorized fraternity party. We do know there were drinking gangs. We knew there was alcohol being served to minors. But he then disappeared, and we don't know how he died. Nonetheless, we've got a fraternity that's having a party with unauthorized alcohol, unregistered party, and so on. So after that happened, I think you know the Greek system itself took some very serious steps. They banned all social activities for the remainder of last semester, and they imposed very strict sanctions on they, on their peers who violated those sanctions. And then I announced some new reforms, not new policies, but stricter enforcement of the policies. For example, with a roving security force that's going to be boots on the ground trying to make sure we don't have unauthorized parties. And then I have VP Lombardi looking into changing the recruitment process so it possibly is less, not possibly, but hopefully is less exclusive, more welcoming, replacing parties with philanthropy and so on. I know there are a lot of talk out there that I'm trying to shut down the fraternity system. In fact, I'm trying to save the fraternity system, because if there are any more serious episodes, it's going to collapse under its own weight. Right now, the insurance companies are all pulling out of insuring universities for fraternity incidents, and ultimately, if we can't get this together, it will collapse. And then the only other thing, there are a couple other things, but I think I would like to give you a really brief update on what we're doing in sustainability, because I think that is a topic of interest to everyone, including me. So first of all, let me just talk a little bit about campus operations. And actually, if you haven't had Rick Burgess in, I would encourage you to come talk with you. He has a wonderful presentation on this. Cornell has been interested in environmental sustainability since at least 1985. And we were, in fact, the first university to sign the Kyoto Protocol in 2001. We put in place this very ambitious goal. We have this goal of being carbon neutral by 2035. Since the baseline year, 10 years ago, we've already reduced our emissions by 37%, despite a growth in the number of buildings. We do that by retrofitting and investing in highly efficient new buildings. We do that by investing in alternative renewable energy sources. For example, we're very heavily invested in solar panels throughout the region. We're working on a major solar project with the SUNY schools that would have an incremental additional significant increase in our carbon emissions. And of course, we're exploring earth source heating, which could be a game changer. Because of that, we have what's called ASHI. We have a gold star rating. We're ahead of all our peers in the Ivy. We're an academic institution, so we also do teaching and research and outreach on this. 585 faculty members are fellows at the Atkinson Center for Sustainability. So between a third and quarter of our faculty in one way or another are doing research and teaching in sustainability. And we have a number of very important examples of outreach. And I want to mention just two. Bob Howarth, who some of you know from Ecology and Environmental Biology, was recently named to the 22-member New York State Climate Action Council. This is the group that's going to figure out how the state can make real its goal to be carbon neutral by 2050. And our Atkinson Center itself recently joined the Sustainability Consortium. This is a global nonprofit with a number of major companies, PepsiCo, Alcoa, companies you would have heard of, that's working to develop a greener supply chain so that consumer products are greener and more sustainable. The third pillar of this is our endowment, and it is important to know that a large percentage of our endowment is held with managers who have signed on to various, they're called ESG, Environmental, Social, and Governance Principles. One that you hear about a lot is UNCRI, the United Nations Principle of Responsible Investing. About 70% of our funds are currently in being managed by managers who have signed on to or other ESG principles. You won't get to 100% because some of what we invest in are things like U.S. Treasuries, to which this doesn't apply. But if you look, you'll see a steady growth there. So it is something that we are extremely interested in. And then the very, very last thing I wanted to say is go to a hockey game. Hockey game is number two. I was at the Harvard. It was my first Harvard game, so I got to see the Fish. I've never seen the Fish before. It was a lot of fun, and they're playing really well. I went to the men's basketball game earlier that day, and they also won. So things are going well there. All right, those are my updates.
All right. Well, like we've done in the past, we figured we'd give you a round of committee updates.
That's great.
And then go from there and ask some questions.
Excellent.
So, hey, would you like to go for the executive committee?
Yeah, sure. So I don't know if you know this or not, but in fall of 2019, the Employee Assembly conducted a brief poll to the Cornell staff members asking the question, what do you think the Employee Assembly's top priority for this year should be? So we received 618 responses in 2017. We've received about 224. So we've seen some improvement in the numbers. So it's good to get the feedback so that we can get sort of consensus on what are some of these things that staff members across campus are concerned with. So by a margin of one vote, the number one priority is employee health and well-being, followed by parking and transportation. And I shared with you our priority poll summary report, which also has a graph of how we've been doing in regards to these responses. What we saw looking through this, so Carrie Sanzone worked very hard on this report, and we worked together on bringing all this data together and making it clean and making it something we could try to measure and also try to share with us. Probably so that they can kind of get a sense of what is all of this feedback. 618 responses kind of sift what does this all mean is a pretty big project and undertaking. So we identified some key themes within the employee feedback. We presented it to the EA. So I'm just going to present some of these key features to you. Feel free to interrupt me.
I always do that.
That's okay. As you see, employee health and well-being is the number one priority, and I think what we heard a lot from staff members was there's stress from job demands, external factors, staff are feeling the pain of attrition. You've heard this before, people feel as if they're being asked to do more with less. In regards to well-being, utilization of fitness centers and wellness programs are hampered by proximity, transportation, and available time. We've got parking issues, which have not gone away. It sounds like people have the impression that the issues are worsening, parking availability is limited, costly, the TCAT system is unreliable. Staff are craving education, development, and career growth opportunities. I think a lot of that is in some ways impacted by supervisor support. It sounds like from the results that we've seen, supervisor support is key to well-being and satisfaction, and supervisor support touches on a lot of key areas, whether it comes to access to different opportunities or whether they're education-related, training-related, career growth-related, that is a big factor. As it comes to benefits and there's a perception, good or bad, and it varies depending on who you ask. Some people in contract colleges, some people in the statutory colleges might have different feedback. So we found that was pretty interesting. that the feedback was very varied. People were like, I love these benefits. Some people were like, I hate these benefits. So it really varied. Staff are calling for more opportunities to train across campus to improve campus climate and workplace culture. Campus sustainability practices, according to some, are falling short of ideals. Recognition is deserved, but some of the feedback that we've heard is that they're dissatisfied with the current approaches. And this is all feedback that we've shared with campus partners across campus to address these issues. And staff want more communication and opportunities for community engagement. As we've seen, you know, when we did the staff conversations, people were really very happy with the opportunity to engage with different members. And we're still seeing that, you know, given the opportunity, staff will show up and try to be engaged. And so with that, this is the key feedback. The executive committee has shared with the committee chairs the priority poll results in hopes that within the committee, they'll be able to review these issues and then work through them. It's not just the count of numbers. It's also, you know, written feedback that we provided to the committee chairs to share and then work through. We recognize that there are realistic constraints to implementing these. There are suggestions that staff provided, and we provided those as well. So we realize that there are limitations to what, you know, we can achieve within the committees, but we hope to work closely with campus partners to have these conversations, to address some of these issues, to give them additional resources to say this is an issue, we've seen it across campus, and here's some of, you know, some definite.
I think it's really good that you're prioritized. Mm-hmm. Everybody, there's a lot of things, no matter what the organization, there's always a lot of things that everyone wants to do, and you can't do them all. So getting a sense of what's most important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that is the summary of the priority poll. We've feedback. We're right. Really absorbing this information. We're working through committees. And, you know, we invite community members to join our committees to continue these conversations and work to be part of, you know, what are solutions that we can come up with, partnering with different individual units across campus. So this is priority poll.
Thank you.
Two other items from the executive committee. We are working. Adam Howell specifically is working on an upcoming opportunity to honor Gregory Fields. As you know, his passing was something that really impacted the staff community. And so details have not been finalized. We will provide an update once we have more formalized details, but it is something that we're working on. And then, you know, as things change, the executive committee currently is working on resources on transitioning for other executive committee members as they're interested to kind of get a sense of timeline, important dates, events, appointments, things to prepare for, and document any ongoing work so that any sort of transition with the executive committee will be one that is smooth and well informed. So those are the things that we've been working on.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's great.
Carrie Zanzone, our communication awards chair, is joining us online. Carrie, can you hear us?
Hey, yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, how are you? Hi, President Pollack. So I'm the chair of the Communication Outreach and Awards Committee, or recognition rather, sorry. I'll start with just a data point. In the 2016 staff survey, respondents, only 28% of respondents said they believed the EA represented their interests. And so I'll start there with that story, which is a pretty low number. And so ever since then, we've been trying to show the staff what the EA does, raise the visibility of the EA, and in some ways prove ourselves, show how we represent the staff members. And so that the priorities poll that Hey mentioned, that first 2017 poll came out of, was a response to the 2016 survey. We really wanted to find out what we should be doing to represent the staff. And so my committee this year worked on support of that poll, promotion. We tried to do extra this time around to get that poll in front of people that don't normally sit in front of their computer screens all day. So we did some print promotion, some postering near time clocks. And I think just an extra effort to promote gave us a little bit of an edge and an improvement in the numbers this year. We also worked, as Hey mentioned, on analysis of the data Another thing that we've been doing this year is to be more active at staff events. So actually, you might have noticed a couple of your serving buddies from the employee celebration here. I think they were at your station.
Indeed.
Yeah. So we've been trying to be visible at events like that. We've been partnering. Ellen Miller is our volunteer coordinator, basically, for the committee. And she's been partnering with Cheryl McGrath in the CRC. So we try to be involved in all their events as well. And we have our annual tabling events that we're gearing up for. Literally gearing up because we're going to be ordering some EA swag, hopefully, to give away, and we'll save you something at our tabling events. And I think that we've seen an improvement. We've seen more interaction this year, especially. I've noticed people seem more willing to write to us, to come up and talk to us about issues, and I think that's it in a nutshell. We just want to be visible and approachable and show that we are acting on the feedback that we receive, even if it just amounts to looking into it, making connections, making a referral. Let's see. Other activities, again, on the same lines, we send out a periodic newsletter. We're working on our next one right now. We'll be doing support for Jessica's elections committee for the spring election. And we'll also be awarding the George Peter Award for dedicated service this year, so this spring.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Carrie. Our Employee Education and Development Committee, Marcy.
Hi. For the priorities poll, which is everyone's mentioning, education was the third most important to them. So in looking at some of their comments, it seems apparent that there may be a lot of, there may not be as much, you know, any people may not know about the benefits. It's, yes, there's supervisory issues as well in getting permission, but some of their comments have just seemed like they wanted staff to, you know, participate in learning opportunities that aren't job related, but you know that is one of the benefits that you have, that you can participate in things that are job related with your supervisor approval. So we also met with some people from the class program, which is the community learning and service partnership. So we met with Annalise Raymer, and she joined one of our meetings with Sasha Endo and Susan Berry. And they discussed their program and then the challenges that they have with the program. And so that was interesting. And we're going to have her come to one of our meetings to discuss what their challenges are. It isn't necessarily that they don't get participants. It's their, getting volunteers and stuff and keeping their program running. And also continuing to support. So it just might be the employee assembly, just make sure that they put their support to this program. We also met with people from the Health and Welfare Benefit Program team, Maureen Kroll and Donna Bugliari and Michelle Afav, back in the fall. And they put forth all of those things and all the benefits that they manage, which is a lot. and there were some things, and again, I think it's more that employees may not know all the benefits that are available to them. I mean, people talk about, even people that I work with talk about, you know, they'd like to get more education, they'd like to get, you know, to have more opportunity. And really all it is just taking the time to do that, to take that, you know, go be proactive and ask your supervisor for that. So we're still going to work on bringing a little bit more and also look at ways how we can promote their program.
Can I ask you, do you have a sense of whether people prefer the convenience of online or the personal touch of face-to-face for these kind of programs, or do you think it's pretty even?
I personally think it's pretty even. I mean, there's a lot of people, depends on, you know, at least me working at that college, a lot of the techs don't have time, and they need the online program. But then there are others, you know, that want the in-class, okay. You know, so it depends on the person.
Really well for us. I saw Christy Mahoney. Oh, right here. Okay. Hi, Christy.
Oh, hi.
So I'm Christy Mahoney. I'm the chair of the Employee Welfare Committee. This term, we've continued our partnership with Bridget Brady and Reed Gehrig in the Transportation Office, supporting their initiatives, supporting Chris's support of their circulator resolution, and following up on some of their more recent engagements around pedestrian safety. So we'll be doing more of that in the coming weeks. Additionally, we have reached out to Linda Kroll House, to prepare for engagement with her and other in that office for the staff survey in the coming years to make sure that we're in step with them, understand how we can be supportive. Finally, we've spent quite a bit of time speaking with Michelle in the welfare office, talking about not only the CARE Fund and how we could be more supporting, encourage more engagement in supporting the CARE Fund, but also, as Marcy said, increasing awareness of the benefits that exist on campus for staff around nicotine cessation in light of the developments within the UA around that as a possibility for campus being kind of meeting that in a proactive way, offering support. We actually brought in, I'm forgetting her name as well, from CRC, who does a program on that as well. I lost it, sorry. The CRC office is also engaged.
So my recollection, although I would be perfectly fine with a smoke-free campus, but my recollection is that your survey was not terribly supportive of that. Is that right?
David is not here. I don't have the results with me. David did the survey through the university assembly, and he can speak to the results with it. But I think it was, if I remember right.
Okay. Thank you.
Employee benefits, Brian.
Hi. So I just became the chair at the last meeting, so I'm trying to figure out what's been going on and where we're at. I'm trying to suck in the notes and plan the first meeting and learn how to run Zoom. I think our next meeting is going to be on the 12th. I'm going to send out invitations to everybody on the committee so that you can mark down your calendar if you're already on the committee. The last meeting, we had some guests, Kim Bakuka provided some information about career movement at Cornell. I thought some of this stuff was very interesting. About 6,000 staff positions at Cornell with about 600 job profiles, 9 pay bands, and 14 job families. So that's pretty interesting stuff. They're also talking about external benchmarks from SHRM indicate the national promotion rate is about 4%. Cornell is at 8%. 75th percentile, so that's pretty cool. Cornell's up there. So those are nice benchmarks. We also had Alan Bishop talk about a few things. Gordon Barger talked about the two-year wait for exempt employees, and we're still hashing out some of the things that were on the agenda then. And the final thing that came up is we're having a discussions ongoing about the bereavement policies and things that can do that either look at that and see if it's perfect for all the staff that are here.
Great. It's really interesting to be looking at promotion rates in the context of benefits. I wouldn't have thought of that, but it makes perfect sense.
I thought it was pretty cool stuff.
I think it might be, Mary, you tell me if I'm wrong, but I think it might be an advantage of being in a small community is that there's more incentive to try and mentor and develop and promote from within.
For job opportunities, I went online just recently and I learned that there's two places, the two biggest employers, and this is even at the congressional websites they listed, two biggest employers in this district for the Congress is Corning and then Cornell.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. So,
our last committee chair, Jessica Withers, is our elections committee chair.
Hi. So when you were here in September, we had 9 open seats. And we're down to 2 incidental vacancies now.
Pretty packed.
pretty pleased with that. The goal was to have them all full, but two pretty good. The elections committee is meeting tomorrow to start planning the spring election. We'll also be looking at a joint resolution with Adam to recommend a Cornell tech seat.
Good.
Which we think aligns nicely with your One Cornell priority. So we're hopeful it'll speed through and be at your desk soon. That's really all we have going on right now, which is actually a lot.
Thank you.
And let me just say for my part, especially with so many, our assembly is nearly full, and I can't say enough good things about how hardworking the chairs in these committees have been and the dedication of really all the members, but especially our chairs. So thank you all. We have time for a few questions.
Yeah, and thank you for those reports. It really is helpful for me to hear that from you. Yeah, I can take some questions if people have questions. Yes, ma'am.
So, on January 16th, the Cultural Advisors Implementation Committee submitted its final report on recommendations for advancing public policy by re-envisioning CEG to a college of public policy. So, I know it's still relatively early on, but do you have any initial impressions of the report? Is there an approximate timeline for any decision-making? Do you have any updates?
Yes, and I actually want to rephrase what you're saying. I mean,
sure.
The report had two recommendations.
Yes.
One was a re-envisioning of college human ecology as a public policy school. The other was creating a new school of public policy. And it was split decision. It was 6-4, but it was clearly split. Since that time, the provost has been out really listening to people, not just in the social sciences, but across campus, talking with alumni, talking with students. A decision will be made sometime this semester. We're not going to let this drag on forever, but he and I are trying really hard to listen to the input, all the input we're getting from all the stakeholders, and trying to come to some solution. Look, there's no solution that everyone's going to be happy with. Even if we said we're dropping the whole project and doing nothing tomorrow, a lot of people would be angry, and that wouldn't achieve our goals. And let me restate what those goals are. Have very strong social sciences and have a strong public policy presence. But we're trying to look for a solution that will maximize those goals while imposing as minimal disruption on other people. The one thing I want to stress is that every area of study will be protected. So faculty in human ecology, students in human ecology, we are going to honor the commitments we have to them for their areas of research. Beyond that, I'm not trying to be evasive. We just, no decisions have been made at this point. We really are trying to get as, now that we've narrowed down the space, get as much as we want. Thank you.
Other questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
This might be for Mary, I'm not sure, but I think there was a climate survey done, perhaps 2016, mm-hmm. And I was wondering, are there plans for another survey?
So we do a survey. It's in conjunction with the EA about every 5 years. And I think the conversations are just starting with Political Health about whether the way we've done them in the past is the best way to collect the information. So there's an advantage to surveying that in the same way every 5 years because you get longitudinal data. On the other hand, there's new research that says that's actually not the best way to get the timeliest data. So shorter, more focused surveys, they're called pulse surveys, may end up being a better way to hone in on the key issues. Because we really didn't find much shift between the 2010 and the 2016 data. And that doesn't surprise me. If you go back and look at the survey, it's a hard survey to make actionable. They're the same things to Hayes' point that we've been hearing. They're shifting slightly, so interest in career movement is still high, but wellness and well-being is a little higher. So we will do something. I think Christy's work with Linda will help us figure out what the thing should be, but we will do something.
I'm not familiar with it. Is that survey data available?
The survey results are available both through the HR website and through the Institutional Research and Training website. Mm-hmm.
Did that break it down to various levels and how far
it's available, so it's brought down to the college level. That's not on the site. It doesn't go much farther than that because then it becomes difficult to protect the anonymity, which we, or confidentiality, which we agreed to. But you can, we did bring it down and then give it to each dean and university leader. I will tell you, because I see all of it, it doesn't change much from unit to unit, and that's why working harder at deciding what we're trying to understand and maybe get away from these broad surveys. This is a national trend, and engagement surveys just haven't really actually resulted in much change. So I looked at every piece of data, I read every single comment, and honestly, the comments are interesting, but the survey itself is a hard survey to action.
Yeah, what I was wondering actually, Tyson, what we talked about earlier, is from the staff side of it, is we'll hear it's some leadership is more supportive of people participating or giving them, allowing time, then some are not as supportive for various participation in various programs,
yep,
or in support of our core goals,
yep,
things like that. So I guess with that comes accountability if you have, you know, recognizable certain segments of staff where we're realizing things and others we are not.
Right. So I don't want to take up too much time since you have the president here and you can always talk to me. But what I'll say is that what we know is that the whole issue of the experience under a manager is pivotal to somebody's sense of well-being and connection. So the manager that, so what we're trying to do is focus on giving the skills to managers so that they can experience this workforce in a more supportive way. What we aren't finding is that we have a like strong team of problematic managers down a silo in a particular college or in a particular unit. That it happens everywhere, that depending on what the role is and what the expectations are, that we have more or less satisfaction with the sense of manager approval. That issue keeps coming up. So in some places, manager approval creates exactly the right conversation that you want to have so that people can understand the balance between doing the thing they want to do and getting their work done. In other places, it feels very much like alcohol. And you know that.
Brandon?
So kind of on some of the topic, and you mentioned about online learning versus in-class learning, I wanted to get a sense of what was the goal or the initiative behind the change with eCornell being a privately organization and shifting it to a Cornell organization? And on that same note as well, this is probably for both of you, is there a thought behind that becoming an available resource to Cornell staff members? So while it's not a for credit, many of my constituents in student campus life work since the 8 to 4:30, to 2:30, and class learning is hard for them to be able to do. So
let me answer both of those. I'm glad you asked that. So when I got here, I looked at eCornell and I thought, wow, this is an organization that it had sort of stumbled along for many, many years, and then they got a new CEO a couple years before I got here, and it was on a great trajectory. But I felt like its trajectory was going to asymptote out because it was so disconnected from the university. Its incentives, its goals were not aligned with those of the university. At the same time, we have a number of executive education programs around campus, notably in the business school, but in CALS, in ILR, even some in arts and sciences. And they were all at different levels of maturity and doing different things, but often, as is the Cornell way, replicating the same processes, not communicating. So if somebody took a great course in ILR online on human resources and then wanted to learn finance, there was no way to connect them to the business school. The third thing that I saw happening out in the world is a real revolution in the way education is delivered. I mean, we're not going to get rid of campus, at least quality residential education campuses. That's not going away. There was this period when everybody thought it would go online. People liked to be in classes and with each other. But particularly at the postgraduate level, and the pre-graduate level before students get here, and in other circumstances with like staff members, we're seeing new ways of certifying learning. So certificates or micromasters or badges or stackable credits. And so it seemed to me that for a whole host of reasons, we ought to bring all of this effort together. We ought to have an aligned strategy across the campus. We ought to coordinate for back-end processes. So shared HR principles, shared marketing, shared platform for development. We ought to allow for content reuse between the online course and the face-to-face and the blended. And we ought at the university to position ourselves to be more strategic in this space. So that's why we did that. We brought it all in. Paul Krause, who was the CEO of eCornell, continues to lead this program along with Steve Carvell, who comes from the business school and adds the faculty perspective. For the moment, their priorities, for the moment, short term, are basically three things. One, having eCornell continue to do what it's doing. Two, starting to get in place appropriate, like funds flows, consistent funds flows that the faculty keep teaching and so on. And then thirdly, we're really focused on the opening of the Verizon Education, Executive Education Center at Cornell Tech in a couple of months. Over time, really everything, including professional development, is on the table. We've got to get through the first 6 months. You know, it's kind of like a merger. We've got to get through the first 6 months of a year of getting everything in alignment. And then I think the sky's the limit with this project. I'm very excited about it. And yes, I think there will be opportunities to think about employee and professional development, but not in the first 6 months. We've got to get these other things done.
Well, Paul's already raised it with me, and I think to Martha's point, we're interested in it. I think as the model evolves, we'll understand exactly how to think about the funding for that. So right now, our degree program and our activities are for it. But for example, HR has had a long-standing relationship with eCornell where they give us a discount and then we fund additional so that people can take the HR courses online through eCornell. So we know that there are models that work. And we're really, I think, really excited about the possibility of bringing staff development programs through eCornell.
You know, you probably heard it through MOOC, massive online. There's something, it's a terrible thing, but it's called a SOOC, small, I think it's like called SOOC, small open online course. So if you have a community of people on the Cornell campus taking an online course, even though most of the time, you know, they might be doing this because they do work 8-4 and they're really busy, but you can set things up where like two or three times during the semester you create meetups or events, or you can create things where people in the same area are hooked up with each other so that they can ask each other questions and so on. This is one of these blended experiences that people are beginning to experiment with, and I think it's an exciting thing.
Which, by the way, you can see in supervising at Cornell, which is both an online course of learning us. So it works very well. We're getting a lot of positive feedback. 150 people so far are using supervising at Cornell, so it can happen.
And the course that faculty are taking, teaching in a multicultural classroom with them, where you do online things and then you get together.
Thank you so much. I want to applaud the efforts that HR has been doing to make those coursework available, and I'm excited to hear those developments with eCornell. I'm currently taking their beer appreciation course, so I know it's a great program and there's a lot of fun stuff there.
This Friday, I shouldn't tell this, but I will. So at the last week ago, I went to a pop-up dinner for Hotel Ezra Cornell, which are hotel students, you know, practice for this big conference, and I was sitting at the table with our beer professor and our wine professor, who are married to each other. And I said, well, you know, what I'm really interested in is Amaro. And they said, as it happens, a week from Friday, we're having an Amaro seminar. So you should know.
Well, we got to talk. I'm an Amaro fan.
All right.
Sure. Anybody else? Another question?
I had a question.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you're looking. I just want to follow up a little bit on Hey's question. Because besides the public policy, there's also been the super department.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in the College of Arts and Sciences, and I've had a few staff, so what is this going to mean for me? Because I heard you mention reassuring faculty, students, but they're also reassuring for staff.
Oh, let me absolutely reassure staff. There is absolutely zero intention, zero plan, zero to cut any staff. This is not a consolidation effort at all. This is purely on intellectual academic grounds. And we've seen it work. If you look at the way our biology departments, which are essentially super departments, work, we've seen it work in the small in economics, but it hasn't gone as far as possible. This is entirely about things like coordinating hiring. Right now, we might have two departments that are looking for the same subfield when they go to hire a faculty, and
going on. It's about making curricular opportunities more robust for students rather than duplicate courses, share them, and then the faculty can teach other things. But if the only thing it might do to faculty, to staff actually is help them, because if you're part of a super department, you might have more coverage if somebody's out sick or something. But there is, I want to reassure you as strongly as I possibly can that this is not going to negatively impact faculty. There might be some change in how you do things, but it won't be additive. It will, might be just a little bit different so that connections between departments are more seamless. Thank you for reminding me to say that.
Well, thank you so much. All right. So with that, let's move on real quick. Chris, Campus Circulator Resolution, EAR4. What do you guys think? I introduced it to the graduate, the GTSA two Mondays ago, and they were very excited about it. They were happy that someone had a positive attitude and that they were being invited to participate in creating change. So it is on the floor and tabled in their assembly. It is on the floor and tabled in the university assembly. And it is on the floor right now, today, here in the employee assembly. And what I have asked the assemblies to do is use this time to provide any feedback to me at the tables so that around April, towards the end of the session, that we would be able to collect all the feedback, which some of it is like minor word changes from priority to high priority, adding things like our employee priorities poll language in there, as well as the fact that the Sustainable Cornell Council has made this a priority for them. Because when I wrote the draft last May, a lot of things have changed even since then. So there's room to adjust the whereas, as well as the be resolved clauses. And so I'm hoping that if anybody has any specific thoughts, that they can talk about it now. And then sort of we table it at the end of this session, where I will make a motion to table it, and then further collect feedback through the rest of the session so that in the end we can make an amendment with as many of the assembly's language included into it, since it is going to affect all of the people on this campus for the next foreseeable future, 5 or 10 years. This is a long-term project. So that's where we are.
Greg, not a question, but a comment. I wanted to thank you for your hard work on this. I know it hasn't been just you. But as the spokesperson for the folks that are spearheading this, I think it was especially appropriate having Bridget at our last meeting when this was initially raised and seeing that coordination between you all and the folks that it's their job to do on campus was great. And Christy, thanks for your leadership with this as well.
Any other questions for Chris?
Hey. Hi, everyone. Chris and I spoke earlier this week, and I'll just sort of pass along the same feedback. When I looked at this, and I get the idea that the idea is to be consistent, and it sounds like you want to be able to pass the same resolution in each assembly. But when I look at this, knowing what we know about our staff and the very acute problems that they're having that affect them every single day, I feel like this is just not staff specific enough. I would be more in favor of some sort of voice of support for a UA thing, but to pass something from the employee assembly that isn't staff focused gives me some pause, I guess. Because I think, we have very specific use cases, and we're just, we represent the staff. And so I would just like to see more emphasis on that.
Yeah, thanks for that feedback, Carrie. What I can tell you guys is that this is the best time to possibly pass a resolution like this. TCAT is going through and right now is at the end of their RFP for their overall transit development plan. The Cornell Transportation Department is working on the transportation demand management plan. So getting this statement of support that we want this to be a part of their planning is this first step in this project. I think there is a lot of room because it is going to land back at the assemblies for the foreseeable future to work on the designs and collect the feedback because there are going to be adjustments and sacrifices that people need to be made. There are still, we have a five-year timetable, and that was because that was what they thought was a reasonable time for the transportation department. And this is just one project. So this is not like this becomes a project and now they forget about our parking problems. You know, there are other things in the transportation sector that they're doing related to simplifying the permit process. And I'm not the transportation person, I work in IT. But those initiatives are still in progress. So this is really just getting out in front and saying, hey, we want this. And then I think that there is room to provide other resolutions with specific information about what the employees would like to see in this kind of initiative.
Andrea, did I see your hand earlier?
Yes. Yeah, okay. And I don't think it warrants any changes in the wording of the resolution that you've done, but I've had some subsequent conversations with Bridget and Reed about sort of the, we talk about implementation because there are obviously some disability accessibility components and concerns. Like one area of campus is not served currently by any transportation system is the whole Garden Ave around Bailey Hall area. And so trying to figure out if all of the efforts that we would put into a circulator that still leaves a component of campus not served, I think is a big concern because we have some a lot of implementation. So I don't know specifically, I mean, I've looked through it, if there are areas that we can talk about sort of the accessibility component that might strengthen that. I just don't want to not include it and then have it be an afterthought as we proceed.
Karen, then Craig.
I'd like to see the timetable be 3 years and not 5 years. I think 5 years is too long. I think that this is an important issue that needs to be addressed now, and I think 5 years, there's too much time for it to slip away again and just be an afterthought. So I think it could just be a little bit stronger support for a shorter time.
Sure. What I would say about that is that this is a massive project. This involves us as a city changing our whole transit plan. The way that TCAT connects to us, you know, when we have a 2 or 3 route circulator on campus, you know, things have been brought up about how, you know, I get stopped at Seneca and get picked up and brought here. Now I'm just going to add another stop. And the considerations of we're trying to provide a barrier-free, meaning no financial cost to anybody to ride around on campus, and then the employees right now have it good. This year we've got free TCAT, the employees have that, but it's only first-year students in their studies. I would be worried that if we change the timetable, it's not in alignment with what the people who would be doing the work would actually say is reasonable. It also could damage the seriousness of saying, hey, let's build this entirely new, innovative, sustainable, thing in 3 years. If the funding, so I did have a question that I asked President Pollack about where do we get funding involved, because it is going to require funding to some extent. There will be, you know, trying to make do with what we have. As Bridget mentioned, in the summer is the time frame for trying to pilot some changes to like Route 82, which is the closest thing we have to a circulator. But it is not at a point where they're going to hire a whole department or this is somebody's full-time job to realize this within 3 years. There's been positive and negative repercussions to things where Route 10 got redesigned, and it is successful, and it's so successful, it's a victim of its success because it's so popular that people are, you know, the buses are now filled up. And so this is really an iterative, incremental change that has to go along. You know, just getting the language in front of everybody here took me almost 2 years, and these are just the words of getting started. So I do appreciate that the employees, as an employee, getting around campus is very important. This has been something that has been out there for 11 years, but this is the first time of trying to request it with an end goal that is reasonable, and if it does get fast-tracked. And of course entertain anybody's language about what ideas do we have that we can put that kind of language either in this resolution or on the side. And to me, it's like this should be a high priority as opposed to just a priority for the university.
Correct. Clearly, this is a staff issue, but it's a global issue for the entire community. And I think that if we narrow the focus of language from the EA's perspective, we're going to weaken the overall voice of the all of the assemblies in achieving the end goal. So I think at this starting point, the more generic the language, the more flexibility we have going down the road to do refinements to address concerns that Carrie mentioned. But on this front end, I think we need to have a more global view.
I was actually going to say something similar. I think it's pretty perfect as it stands. I mean, I agree that maybe accessibility issues need to be thought about with it, but I think it makes sense that it addresses our whole, all of us. And when I first read this, when you first said it, I thought, for all the complaints I hear, this solves several problems, which is, how do I get out there efficiently, way out, and how do I get from the parking lot to my job? You know, so I think it's a great step in the right direction.
One other thing I would mention is that, you know, me even picking 5 years and they picking it, like, there is no project plan that they have yet on how they're actually going to do this. So, that, you know, we could say 2 years or 100 years. It's sort of arbitrary because there's no way that we are in this resolution asking for milestones of when is this going to be done. That is a part of when they actually have a project, when everybody, all the stakeholders are a part of that. And then at that point, I think, is where we can lay on the pressure or ask for expedition and funding and making things happen on a faster timetable.
Right.
That's one of the things you just kind of let off for me. I think you went in my mind too. So we're looking at this as being contingent upon funding, and they're looking at assemblies as being one of those avenues where we got this, they're there for it, so can we get funding? So they're looking at it as a way to get funding. So I think that with all assemblies, I think those are contingent upon each other, so I don't think that you can create a deadline on that until you're able to secure that. I also am interested in how TCAT's going to have their design overhauled, and if that's going to affect the circulator themselves. Maybe they see a need, a source of revenue, who knows, and they may come up with some of the stuff to help. So it's got to go in contingent with everything else. So all in all, I read through it numerous times. I think it was a great program, a great start, and I think it's well needed at Cornell. It's been needed for years, and I my hat's off to you for coming up with the resolution and try to push it.
So, there are no other questions, Chris.
I just have a follow-up,
sorry.
Actually.
Yeah, Carrie, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, regarding the staff thing, I think even if we just put more language, I mean, there's plenty of whereas clauses already. Even if we put language that tries to illustrate the staff problem, I think that would help. I read this, and yeah, it's, I can see your point, Craig, about it being more generic, and that being more, I guess, palatable or stronger, but to me, it just doesn't read like it has enough of the staff concerns in mind. Or maybe they're in mind, but they're not on the paper. And so I would advocate for some language in there to try and illustrate the staff point of view a little bit more. And I would say, you know, my first impression when I looked through it, I scroll right to the resolve clauses of everything. I do end up reading the whole thing, but I always scroll to the end. It's like reading the last page of a book. But I was struck by the five-year thing. I mean, I have no idea what it takes to put together this system. It's not my wheelhouse. But I think just from thinking of reactions, perceptions, a staff member reading that, reads the five-year plan, they may be retired by then. I mean, 5 years is the lifespan or the career span of a millennial these days, or a millennial employee. So 5 years just seems like an awful long time to say, you know, something's going to happen. And so I almost would say, why put that in there? You know, that the resolution could call for some, you know, a proposal or a plan or a pilot program, but that the five-year thing, to me anyway, just leaves a bad taste because it's so far away. If you know, that's all.
You know, I think a lot of great points. I think at times we all suffer from analysis paralysis. This is something that has been on the docket for many years, and it's been, you know, we could battle the semantics of what it was. I think it's we all are in agreement. It's a needed thing. We can put 5 years, we can put 10 years, we can put 3 years. Ultimately, as it goes forward, the persons and people involved in the project will designate how they can implement this project effectively, those who are the experts in this realm. And I think we heard from Bridget and the team there that they are in support of this. There was not a single moment of dissension from that organization. So I think effectively, if we move this forward, I don't see us having a battle of getting them. Now they have a battle to get funding. We know that. And the sooner we get them the opportunity to start that, I think the better we are as an assembly and making that resolution happen.
So I want to thank everybody for your thoughtfulness about this, your different perspectives. That is the strength of the assembly to hear where everybody is and coming from their different lenses. The good news is we do have time up until around April, but I'd like to vote on this before the end of the session to strengthen this and try to add the right amount of mix of language that is palatable to strengthen it for everybody. Because the students have said, They say on-campus access would be a lot better, but not at the expense of off-campus access. And that is also the thing. It's like, I can get to my class, but I can't get home anymore. How do we put that in there to sort of protect that? So with all that being said, we have more time. I'm really interested in your ideas and language of how we can strengthen this. And so I would motion that we table this resolution indefinitely. And then that's my motion.
There's a motion to table forward. Do we have a second? Second, correct. Motion or the resolution is tabled for the time being. Just to dovetail off this with a couple of procedural things, because I want to clear something up from last meeting. Carrie rightfully pointed out in the meantime, I mentioned that that it takes two meetings that we are required to have two meetings to pass a resolution. Carrie pointed out that that's actually not the case, and I confirmed it in the rules. We are not required to utilize two meetings to pass a resolution. I just wanted you all to be aware of that. If, for instance, you know, last year we did a resolution honoring Nancy Doolittle, that took one meeting. So I just don't want you all to think that is a hard and fast requirement. The rules say that if we are not able to come to a conclusion and vote on a measure in one meeting, it can be placed under business in the future. This will be placed under business of the day until Chris decides to bring it for a vote. You all have the opportunity to, like Carrie did, you know, recently, to reach out to Chris, ask him questions, offer potential amendments. This intermediary time is when we can work on this, or at least attempt to come to a consensus and build a resolution that fits, or at least tries to fit some of your concerns. So I encourage you to reach out to Chris and ask him questions.
I just wonder, I have a question, like procedurally, mm-hmm. if it's helpful or not to place comments in the box where the located. I feel like that's an easy way for everyone to see everyone else's comments and the flow of what's happening with it, and I don't really see anyone ever do that with anything that we post in the box. So
yes, that is, I think, the best way. That's how comments and things were put under resolutions that I've seen in the past. So that would be the preferred way to do this is to, other than reaching us, you know, or others individually, you know, put your suggestions on this in the box and comments, or if you've got a lot, maybe put an alternate draft or things like that. But that is the forum where we can all go back and forth on specific pieces of legislation, so to speak, so specific measures. Okay, so this will, like I said, remain under the agenda, but it will be tabled until Chris brings it to a vote or if there is a new version to look at, an amended version. that moves us into a few minutes of open discussion. If any of you have anything you'd like to bring for the good of the order. I
do want to get back to Chris's question.
The employee club that we were talking
oh,
about.
Oh, that's a good call. Thank you.
Yeah.
The employee club.
I want to make
Chris
sure.
Chris or Brandon, yes.
Everyone is ready. I'm absolutely in support of this, and I've spoken with my leadership as well that you know, we would be in full support of providing a venue in which we could have this sort of a gathering. And I think maybe a clarification is this is not something that needs to have a resolution. This can be simply an initiative, a project, and we as an employee assembly say, you know, we want to do this. Cornell Dining partnering with the employee assembly to say, here's a discount opportunity. Come and have lunch. Meet up with your assembly. So that's kind of where I see it.
Yeah, the way I would put it also, yeah, we don't need a resolution to do this. Maybe someday if we got it off the ground, we could do one supporting it, you know, or something like that. But to get it off the ground, I don't see a resolution being necessary.
I wanted to just say that CRC would support that as well because they're always looking for opportunities for employee engagement on campus. And I know that they are planning some events at Moakley House, like happy hour type events. They're going to do a bingo coming up in the future. So I think to have, to kind of partner with them on that as well as another support of it, I think it's a great idea.
For my part, just from the staff conversations and for many other engagements that we've seen over the last couple of years, people are looking for us a good central place for feeling engaged and feeling as part of the community. This is not a bad role for us to play as an assembly, in my opinion, and it dovetails into engagement with the EA, which is one of our primary focuses. So I think it's a great idea. I appreciate both of you working on it because it's something that if we can develop, could reap great benefits for the EA and for staff in general. So that's my two cents. Jessica.
So I recently mentioned the idea of office hours to Adam, particularly around the election. So this is fantastic. That's better than office hours, and especially if you can move it fast and have it for this election season.
I have it on the agenda for our dining senior team this afternoon to discuss it, and hopefully, I mean, it could be an easy thing of just saying discount option available on this day at this location, whatever it may be. So hopefully.
Just a suggestion, if you develop a work plan for this, maybe put it in the box and let everybody know that there are, whether it's, you know, just how it's evolving, if you want participation comments, things like that. That, again, is another great centralized place to work off of for the entire group.
Yeah.
Brandon, I don't know if this would be possible or not, but in the whatever venue you're able to secure for it, if you can actually put, like, reserved tables that say, like, you know, reserved for, you know, staff lunch or whatever, just to make it easier and more inviting. Because I know it's, like, sometimes crowded.
Depends on where you go. Yeah, we wouldn't do this at Trillium. Because you can't get a reserved table at Trillium. So we'd look for a venue where we could. You know, the primary one we mentioned was the Ivy Room. Often has seating available, being able to reserve some space there. So, yeah. No, I appreciate that.
So to be clear about the ask is we got excited, you know, we've got the room, we need the people, and then we got to pick a time. March is the worst time to be in Ithaca because there's no vacation days at all that we or holidays that we have. So somewhere between March and April, and I think tying it to elections also makes really a lot of sense. But similar to our previous initiatives with employee signups, it is every it's going to be an ask to volunteer. You know, for me, it would be really between 2 and 5 people. You know, in sort of a rotation, it doesn't have to be the same people all the time. To just be there and say, you know, a 5-minute, this is what we're doing. And so if you are interested in supporting this idea, send me an email and I'll collect like a list. But I'll work with Carrie and Ellen on trying to put this together and with Brandon. So thank you all for the time and the interest.
So real quick, Jackie, do you have any events or anything going on? You might want to talk about?
So I'm doing a bake-off to benefit the Wildlife Rescue in Australia. It's going to be at the vet school on Thursday, 12 to 1:30. It's open to all of the Cornell community and beyond. I'm getting prizes from local businesses to give out to bakers for the few categories, which I'm going to – it used to be a pie competition, so there's things like crust and filling, which may not apply for this particular one. So I'm going to get gift cards from Tufts, a $50 gift card for the bakers, and then I'm also getting a gift certificate for 2 for dinner at Texas Roadhouse, and then 100 advertise for gift cards, which I'm going to pair up because it's on Valentine's Day and give those out as door prizes. And hopefully a few more. I actually got a pottery pie dish from one of my faculty members to auction off at the fundraiser. So, yeah. So for everybody, tell everybody. It's on Facebook. It's on Facebook.
Next Thursday.
Next Thursday, the 13th.
Do you want to send it around to the DA group? I'm going to probably enter with my famous wherever I decided to make and call it. With that, I think we're out of time, but I will.
Just quick, super quick. There are a few other events coming up with the CRC. I can also send those around. There is, during February student break, there's going to be a lunchtime ice skating event, a lunchtime bowling event, and an evening cornhole tournament, and all of those will have a donation request for the employee emergency care fund.
Oh, perfect.
Can
you
send
it
out?
Okay, with that,
I'm sorry. I can just piggyback on what Ellen mentioned.
Yeah, very quickly.
Some background to this idea. Well, I mean, it's we're the communications committee, so we try to coordinate events and things. I really feel strongly that we should lean on our developing an awesome partnership with the CRC for social events. I feel great about that idea. It's a very cool concept, but especially since we have a lot of turnover every year, I'm a little weary of branding something EA, some event series. I would much rather start off with partnering with Cheryl, even just for the coordination aspect, scheduling, so that we're not scheduling EA things at the same time there's a CRC event, and do more of a co-sponsorship type of thing. So if you guys would like, we're meeting next week, our committee, and we can talk more about it. I am enthusiastic about it, but I would really like to partner with the CRC still to make use of Cheryl's resources and everything.
With that, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn. He's like, no.
Thanks, everybody.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.